Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we are going to be talking about the week ahead. We've also got news on a lithium contract for Tesla, updates on Musk's Twitter acquisition, some energy news, a shareholder letter from Rivian, some news on SpaceX, and a few other items as well. And as I mentioned on Friday, this week is going to be a live stream week, as editor Jossum is on vacation. So I appreciate your patience with a little bit less edited style this week. All right, so looking at the stock, pretty uneventful start to the week. Tesla up 1.6% today to just under $715 per share. The NASDAQ up 0.4%. Should be a pretty interesting week this week in the markets, as of course, on Friday, we do have the CPI report for May. Obviously, a lot of repercussions of that as we look through and await the next Fed meeting and see what interest rates do from here. If we do get a higher CPI number, that would reflect on the next Fed meeting, probably increasing the expectation for interest rate increases and the commentary around those, which is almost just as important. So investing.com right now has the forecast for the month-over-month increase in CPI to be 0.5%. It looks like that has been rising a little bit. This hasn't seemed to be the most updated number when I've looked at it, but Morningstar is reporting that according to a survey from the Wall Street Journal compiling estimates, the current expectation is 0.7% in terms of that month-over-month increase for the May numbers. So it looks like those expectations have been rising a little bit, and that 0.7% increase probably tracks somewhere to around an 8% year-over-year number, which is right around what we've been seeing there for March and April. So we'll see. If the number comes in higher than that, then that would kind of deteriorate the argument of peak inflation for the time being. It'll be an interesting one, to say the least. So look for that. Just a couple of quick updates on Friday in terms of Tesla stock. So we did see a couple of analyst price target decreases. So Cohen dropped their price target from $790 to $700 per share, just talking about China production there. And then CFRA, they also lowered their price target from $1,350 down to $1,200 per share. So just catching that up from Friday. And then getting into kind of the news for today, a lot of it centering around an update on a lithium contract for Tesla. Just want to clarify before we even start to get into this, this isn't necessarily news. We actually talked about this back in February. This is really just an update on a contract that we had previously talked about. So this is from Liontown, and the contract here is for 150,000 dry metric tons per year of lithium spodumene. And as we talked about when this contract happened back in February, lithium spodumene doesn't convert 1:1 into Tesla batteries. They're going to be using lithium carbonate or lithium hydroxide. And from what I've read, and it's kind of hard to find perfect source data on this, and I'm sure it varies a little bit based on the quality of the spodumene and the conversion process, but what I've read, basically it's 1 part to 8 parts in that process. So getting, you know, 12.5% out of the lithium spodumene. It's also difficult to know exactly how much lithium Tesla's using in their vehicles, but again, from what I've read, probably somewhere around 60 to 70 kilograms, which would imply that a contract like this, starting out at 100,000 tons and then going up to 150,000 tons of spodumene, would be somewhere around 200,000 vehicles or so per year, again, depending on those variables. So it's not the biggest contract, and again, it is something that we had already reported on, but this contract was not necessarily finalized, but moved into the next stage of agreement today. And just to show, you know, previously this news back from February, and they had agreed to form definitive agreements by May 30th. So now we're just hearing the update that those definitive agreements have been reached. But because this is based on supply starting in 2024 and that supply hasn't really been spun up yet, obviously there still could be changes in the future. But that's the news on lithium for today. Then kind of the other big update was on Elon Musk and his acquisition of Twitter. So we've got new 13D filing here. And basically, it's just sort of a summary of the last month of what's been going on with Twitter. A lot of stuff there that's, you know, not important, but I've highlighted a couple things here that are new. Basically, Elon had previously sent a letter to Twitter asking for more information on how they're testing or how they're getting their bot number, which in their filings they've historically disclosed has been less than 5%. Elon has been refuting that claim, saying he wants to see the data behind that. Twitter has responded with their testing methodology, but not the actual data, saying that, you know, that's private data. And Elon is still requesting that. So he said Twitter has refused to provide that information repeatedly since May 9th. So he can't facilitate his evaluation. He's saying that some of the debt financing requires that. So Twitter needs to provide that to even make sure that the deal can be completed from a financial perspective. Of course, on top of Musk's request, he said he's made it clear that he does not believe the company's lax testing methodologies are adequate, so Musk conduct his own analysis. Then it's just basically an argument of whether or not Twitter should be able to provide that, going through some of the terms of the deal, basically saying that the deal says that any reasonable business purpose related to the consummation of the transaction, Twitter is obligated to provide information for those purposes. So Twitter's saying they don't need it. Musk doesn't need it. Musk is saying he is. And that's kind of where it's at. So it's at this point, Musk believes Twitter is transparently refusing to comply with its obligations under the merger agreement, which is causing further suspicion that the company is withholding the requested data due to concern for what Mr. Musk's own analysis of that data will uncover. And then they kind of wraps it up by saying, based on Twitter's behavior to date and the company's latest correspondence in particular, Mr. Musk believes the company is actively resisting and thwarting his information rights and the company's corresponding obligations under the merger agreement. This is a clear breach of clear material breach of Twitter's obligations under the merger agreement, and Mr. Musk reserves all rights resulting therefrom, including his right not to consummate the transaction and his right to terminate the merger agreement. So basically saying if Twitter doesn't provide the data behind this, whole bot situation, Elon has the right to terminate the merger agreement. Now, of course, Twitter and their lawyers are going to feel differently, and if and when that did happen, I don't exactly expect that to happen, but if it were to happen, obviously there would be a legal dispute here, which could take quite a long time. I doubt Twitter really wants to get into that, but they also probably at this point want Musk's acquisition to go through at that share price based on what's been happening in the markets. Musk probably feeling on the other end of that. So whether or not this is a negotiation tactic from Elon to get a lower price, or he actually wants out of the deal based on this, remains to be seen. I still think he wants to acquire Twitter. I think he's been pretty transparent in that regard, but I do think he's wanting to get a lower price based on what's going on here. So when it comes to Tesla, I think the effect there would be, if the share price comes down, probably not much effect. If the transaction doesn't actually come through, Elon's obviously sitting on some cash. Maybe he'd put that back into Tesla, but I wouldn't be surprised if he kind of just kept that cash on hand for other opportunities that might come up, since he's already gone through the process and the repercussions of selling previously. The other thing on the Twitter acquisition, just kind of a quick FYI. So the Attorney General of Texas, Ken Paxton, who I guess has quite a history, not something I'm familiar with, but he has launched an investigation against Twitter for potential false reporting of fake bot accounts, which obviously would impact advertising and business spend on Twitter, and some of those businesses would fall in Texas. So yeah, obviously that should seem to fall under different purview, but given no other action being taken yet, Texas looking into it there. All right, next up, we've just got kind of a couple of updates here from Elon on Twitter. So first, in regard to Tesla service, Elon saying, I believe that was on Saturday, working on Tesla North American service. Goal is 2/3 of cars receive same day service, no wait. So we've heard Elon talk about this before, but I think it's good to hear this tweet from him and say that he's, more actively looking at Tesla service and working on it. Personally, my experiences with Tesla service have been really great, but I know a lot of people get into those circumstances where they're having to wait on a car for a really long time. So I think the structure of what Tesla is doing is strong, but there could be improvements made. And it seems specifically like a lot of those tend to be parts related. So if you have something that, part's not on hand, maybe you're having a huge wait time. If it is on hand, service can be quite good. So Elon looking more into that. And then, of course, we had FSD beta starting to roll out to more customers. Elon saying that's expanding to 100,000 cars. It's kind of interesting because I think previously he had mentioned maybe in the All-In interview that Tesla was at 100,000 vehicles in terms of the FSD beta. He was probably just speaking, directionally in that case. And now Tesla actually expanding up to that amount is my take. Then he mentions here with 10.13, it's going to smooth out intersection control. And then also says that starting to be able to handle roads with no map data at all, which kind of reminded me of my circumstance with the 10.12 beta ride, where My car took the do not enter road and I didn't see those signs. So it's kind of interesting. I wonder if that would be a part of 10.13, although he just says starts to handle. And then he had a follow-up tweet on that saying, I don't think it's right here, but that, in a parking garage, Tesla is not going to have GPS signal, so it should be capable of understanding where it's at just from vision and basically where it has traveled so far. So interesting to see that for 10.13. And then somebody asked also about EU, and I wasn't sure if this was talking specifically about FSD or just some of the other things that the EU has restricted in terms of autopilot. But Elon said that they're close to the point of where offering something for EU regulators to review makes sense, which seems to be related to FSD beta. So, take that for what it's worth. Probably not a whole lot at this point, but they're still working on getting that launched in the EU. All right, next up, we've got another thing on Texas here. So this was not necessarily news today, but started to get some coverage today. Found it from Drive Tesla Canada, but this is the original source here. And this has to do with an EV incentive program in Texas. So they've got a $2,500 purchase incentive for EVs, and that applies to 142 different models in the state. Unfortunately, none of those are Tesla vehicles because how the legislation is structured is that eligible vehicles must be purchased or leased directly from a new vehicle dealer or leasing company in Texas. So under Texas law, vehicles purchased directly from the manufacturer or an out-of-state dealer not licensed to sell or lease new vehicles in Texas are not eligible for a rebate, which of course would be Tesla. So I think we were all kind of hoping that with Tesla building Giga Texas, some of these, dealership restrictions on Tesla would be alleviated to some extent, but we really haven't seen that happen so much quite yet. So we'll see. That does remind me of one thing here. So the first 4680 vehicles we talked last week, those should be, as far as we know, getting delivered this week. I think the first date that we'd seen on an estimated delivery date was like June 5th. I haven't seen anything come out of that yet, but just something to keep an eye on for the rest of this week. And while I'm on that, I realized I also forgot that we should probably get the China May numbers as well from the CPCA later this week, sometime around Friday is my best guess, maybe over the weekend, but something to look out for there as well. All right, next we've just got a pretty interesting update here from Apple. So they had the Worldwide Developer Conference today, and they announced a lot of software-related things at that conference. One such thing was their next generation for Apple CarPlay, which, although they're announcing it today, they say should be, some of the first features should be coming in late 2023. So not quite there yet. But they previewed basically their vision for the next version of CarPlay, and all of this would be running off of an iPhone connected to the vehicle, but basically then powering the operating system for that vehicle. So there's a few screenshots here you can see if you haven't seen those yet. Very dynamic and basically meant to adjust based on whatever different display properties the vehicle has. So it's kind of interesting to see Apple moving in this route. Obviously, they've been doing this with CarPlay for a while, but this is much more fully integrated, much more reliance on the automakers having the proper hardware in their vehicle to be able to facilitate some of the things that they're trying to do here. I had this image pulled up because to me, this reminded me a lot of Tesla setup. So kind of interesting to see a little bit of the divergence there, but a lot of convergence with Tesla's design direction, which I do think could, stand for some updates, some improvements, which we've talked about on previous episodes. But really interesting to see this update from Apple. And the strategy is interesting because I think historically we've seen Apple just have a really tight integration between hardware and software. And especially with CarPlay, a little bit with like Apple TV, we've seen a little bit of that divergence with some of the things that they're doing. Whereas we've got Tesla sort of taking the Apple model of really tight control over hardware and software. Apple's more moving now towards like the Android strategy that we've seen historically, adapting the operating system for a lot of different hardware. That seems to be what we're seeing here with CarPlay. So it's just kind of odd to see that shift in strategy, but it kind of makes sense from Apple's perspective since they've for years been exploring hardware with cars and just haven't seemed to been able to find a model there that's worked for them. I would imagine that they've definitely explored building autonomy into this as, you know, some way, shape, or form, probably in a structure that's sort of like Comma. What Comma is doing is basically just, you know, running everything off a phone as well. I don't think Apple would be intending to do that, but I would imagine with CarPlay and this type of integration, Apple's looking at ways that they could just install autonomous vehicle hardware with the original OEM, and kind of manage it all through CarPlay. That's probably my best guess for where the strategy could go, rather than Apple actually just making their own car. So that might be, we might be seeing a little bit of hints towards that with this CarPlay update. But again, still even a little bit off from even the first introductions of these features. All right, next up, just a couple of things on Tesla Energy. So first is the Elkhorn Battery Project in Moss Landing. So this is a 730 megawatt hour project. Looks like they had the ribbon cutting ceremony for that today. We had talked previously about this coming online, so I'm not sure exactly what the difference was between that and this, but it looks like that is now online. So I would imagine that would hit Tesla's second quarter financials. Again, it's a little bit unclear exactly how Tesla's accounting for those things, but maybe this will give us a little bit better of an indicator since it is such a large project coming online here in Q2. So we'll keep an eye out for that. And then also a little bit of news on solar here, with the current administration declaring a 24-month tariff exemption on solar panels from parts of Southeast Asia, though it is worth noting that that does exclude China and Taiwan. So should be some alleviation on pricing in the solar industry. And then also they announced the use of the Defense Production Act to promote domestic production, which I haven't looked exactly into what they're going to be doing specifically with that. But again, should help supply in the solar industry, particularly here in the US. Sort of an energy related update, I guess supercharging related update. Tesla has updated the supercharger network planning map, I suppose. This is really just like a location find us tool that Tesla has online, but they always update with planned locations. So you can kind of go in and look at your area and see what Tesla's expansion plans are. Kind of interesting with this update, it looks like Tesla would be planning to install their first superchargers in Ukraine, although they don't say exactly when, like they do on a lot of other projects. It just says target opening to be confirmed. But always interesting to kind of see what Tesla's plans are. So, of course, if you want to go over to the US, you can see for your region, it looks like they've got one planned here for close to Milwaukee. I wish they'd put one downtown, but a little bit north. So that'll be nice. All right, next up here, we've got an update on the whole Bill Gates shorting thing. We won't spend much time on this, but Bill Gates in an interview did discuss this in a little bit more detail than he has in the past. And he said that, quote, "I give a lot more to climate change than Elon or anyone else. I give a lot of philanthropic dollars. I back companies. You know, electric cars are about 16% of emissions. So we also need to solve that other 84%. He also added that, quote, "But somebody shorting a stock doesn't slow him down or hurt him in any way," end quote. So, yeah, I mean, one individual person shorting the stock, it's going to lower the share price, but does a lower share price necessarily hurt the company? It's debatable. If the company is fundraising, then yes. If not, it's a little bit more of a up in the air situation. But still, you know, you're still shorting a company that's doing a lot to benefit climate and talking, you know, about how that doesn't really matter. So it's not really the best look for Gates, and to try to say that he's done more for climate change than Elon, or he's given a lot more to climate change for Elon than Elon or anyone else. You know, it's not just about money. If money could be thrown at the problem and solve it, you know, it'd be a lot easier. So it's not to get into like a comparison match, but it would be nice if Gates in those comments would at least recognize that aspect. So yeah, we won't spend much time on that. We'll move on. We've got just a couple of other updates here. First on Rivian. So they issued a letter today to shareholders, and it was a little bit confusing to me because I had to read this like three or four times. Maybe that reflects poorly on me, but I had to read this a few times just to kind of understand what they were trying to get at, because this is a very vague message to shareholders. So they just kind of talk about, you know, the current capital environment. They say that launching multiple vehicles across two platforms during our first year of production has required the coordinated ramp of our supply chain, the hiring and training of our production workforce, equipment bring up, and rapid iteration through quality loops. These launches have been executed during one of the most complex operating environments in decades, with a highly constrained supply chain, continued COVID-19 outbreaks around the world, and more recently, geopolitical unrest with the crisis in Ukraine. They talk about their production capacity, talk about how they've raised $14 billion. The capital markets have changed dramatically. They've focused their roadmap to ensure that the $17 billion of cash that they have on their balance sheet can support the 2025 launch and ramp of their R2 vehicle platform. Of course, now they're on the R1T and R1S, and the R2 platform, I believe, is their lower price vehicle plan. So that was kind of like the main point of the update, which, again, it really doesn't say much. I guess they just don't plan on raising capital is kind of the gist of it, without saying that directly, but that seems to be what they're trying to imply and get across. The rest of this is just sort of boilerplate stuff about, you know, their mission with the company, their vision, how they see themselves fitting in the market, you know, nothing new there. And then they just kind of wrap up saying that they want to be clear to their customers, investors, that they may be adjusting, while we may be adjusting our product roadmap and associated spending, we will continue to make long-term investments in our technology and customer experience. So again, potentially not raising as much capital, adjusting seemingly their spending plans, which, you know, you might take as lower growth plans, although they're not saying any of those things necessarily directly. They say that their top near-term priority is to fully ramp production, and that they've operated at close to full capacity across burst activities while they, you know, continue to ramp up towards that targeted 150,000 per year. So that was my takeaway. It seems like they're adjusting their spending plans and their capital raising plans just based on current market conditions, trying to extend that runway. Obviously, the cash burn so far in these first few quarters for Rivian has been pretty dramatic. The capital markets have facilitated that to some extent, so we'll see where Rivian goes from here. All right, last couple of things here. I think actually this might be the last one. So this is on Starlink. So a couple months back in mid-April, France actually revoked Starlink's internet license, and that has been going, you know, undergoing discussion. Today, or I guess last week, Starlink was re-granted permission to operate in France. So a bit of good news there for Starlink in France. And I do believe that is it. So, as always, thank you for listening. Make sure you are subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. And we'll see you tomorrow for the Tuesday, June 7th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.